Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello and welcome to the Claret and Blue podcast, live on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter this evening as Aston Villa fall to defeat at the London Stadium against West Ham. The technology's failed Villa once again. It's also failed me as my Wi-Fi is terrible this evening. It's also failed Matt, who can't be bothered to plug in his new microphone, so apologies on his behalf. We'll start with you, Matt, and your terrible audio. Thoughts on that tonight?
Obviously, it's the VAR that's going to dominate again, isn't it? But Villa were just found wanting in both boxes again, weren't they? Two terrible goals conceded at terrible times in the game. Trezeguet missed an absolute sitter that the goalie saved from going wide. And then we've spooned a penalty against the bar. So Villa did enough to get a point and technology's let us down again. But it was just a terrible night all round, wasn't it?
James, what do you think?
I've got a stress headache. Like, I'm not in a good mood. And I got a new Villa shirt on, granted to me free by my Uncle JJ. So I was looking forward to coming here, speak about a Villa victory and show off. But now I've got a stress headache.
All right?
I'm in pain. I'm broken.
It's cutting your hair, though.
Yeah, combing my hair because of the results. So I was coming on here to look fancy and posh and all done up. But now you're here speaking about not even VAR, it's the offside rule. The offside rule is not compatible with the application of VAR, as we've seen for multiple occasions. Wesley, Patrick Bamford, and now Ollie Watkins. So I think we can sit here and say Villa probably didn't do good enough. But look, they come back from so much like adversity.
I disagree.
Yeah, I think we
played all right. I don't think we deserve to get something there. We've barely even seen Emi Martinez, let alone him have to make a save. We've missed a penalty. Trezeguet's missed a sitter. Jack's had a decent chance. That should at the end shouldn't be ruled out. I don't care whether it's arms offside or whatever it is, however small millimetres we want to go into. It's not offside, is it? So
no,
Villa deserve a point at least there.
How crap is it when you see... You know, I remember when I was a kid, all the kids who could draw would want to go into architecture or town planning or whatever it was. They wouldn't want to be drawing lines across somebody's elbow to somebody's knee.
It's ridiculous.
You know, it stops for all that. It's just ridiculous.
The thing is, also, the VAR, you say, James, it's the offside rule, and technically, yeah, you are right. But ultimately, it's the technology, isn't it? It's clear and obvious. This is VAR. What was it brought in for?
Exactly.
It's 2.5 minutes
given,
for...
That goal given pre-VAR. Yeah. It's not spotted an infringement.
Exactly.
VAR has gone to check clear and obvious.
Two and a half minutes and millimetres and lines drawing everywhere isn't clear and obvious, is it? Clear and obvious should be one replay and you go, yeah, he's clearly offside. That's clear and obvious, not being under that much scrutiny. That's why it's frustrating.
Yeah, I think no one's going to come here, defend the referee's performance on both sides of the pitch and especially the offside decision. Look, I mean, by the letter of the book, it's offside. It's the book that sucks. Like, if your arm is offside and you do not use that arm to score the goal, what advantage have you gained? And especially if you're being fouled in the build-up and maybe pushed offside, it doesn't allow context. Like, we shouldn't be sitting here debating, was he offside or what? But he was offside. Like, that's the rule. It's just the rule of rubbish.
But why are they even measuring an arm? He can't score with his arm anyway, so why is that even a factor?
It goes back to what you say, clear and obvious. It wasn't clear and obvious because there's so much going on there that is his arm up, forced up? Is it down? Does the arm line change? Does the T-shirt line change? Because
the T-shirt line. So this here is not handball, but this is. How finicky do you want to get with that?
It's dumb. We can't use VAR with the offside rule because we see this like time and time again. It's like it's too close. It's measuring down to the granular of granular. You can't. It's plotting 3D lines on a 2D image. There's so much that's so frustrating about it, especially the context as well, Matt. Because it's a goal in the last minute. A Villa have come back from everything. They come back from missing a penalty, conceding twice early on, two shots on target from West Ham. They scored both. Ollie Watkins misses a free header, well, mostly a free header, misses the penalty. Then he does everything right and he keeps his head on and scores. And, you know, how are you feeling about that?
I love it when you're saying about the T-shirt, is the T-shirt line offside when Villa are rocking their camouflage kit for the first time? Yeah, I mean, the commentator, didn't he, said it wasn't Watkins' night, you know, put the curse on ahead of the penalty. Actually, Watkins had done brilliantly not too long before for Trezeguet's chance. But then there was a massive delay over that, wasn't it? And that must be horrible, that must be, when you're a penalty taker and you're waiting. You've got that kind of long, agonising wait. Mm. I agree with Dan that Villa did enough to get something from the game. I think Villa can't have too many complaints. Well, other than the usual VAR one.
Things out of their hands, effectively.
About not getting anything from the game just because the defending was so poor. You know, we saw for the first goal again that, you know, Target was starting from a standing jump, his man got a run on him. I think they were saying in the analysis it was Douglas Luiz, his man who got away. The second goal as well, you know, to allow Jarrod Bowen to score with a header. Decent ball in for Benrahma, but it's within what was it, 35, 45 seconds?
30, sure. Off,
you know? And it's just basics. It's the kind of Villa with a soft belly of last season. And listen, we said we knew when we battered Liverpool and we knew we went to Arsenal and went to Leicester, we knew there'd be some levelling off period. But I think Villa have been in the last two games and probably could have won the last two games, 100%. Let alone got a draw. So, and I know we've been stuffed by VAR, but Villa had enough opportunities to make that result their own, regardless of lines being drawn from armpits and stuff like that. So that's what frustrates me. As much as it's an easy get out, and I don't think Dean Smith will just look for excuses, but he can come out and his post-match can be, you know, that it can talk about the refereeing and the officiating, whereas really, Dean Smith should be talking about why his defence has been so weak again at the start of both halves, and why your strikers haven't put the ball in the net two or three times anyway. So
before we get on to Villa's actual football, because like you said, I also don't want to make excuses, but I feel like because I thought Villa have been okay today against Brighton, even like we've said in previous podcasts, it's only Southampton scoring wonder goals and Leeds being very hard working. Villa haven't really been bad at any point this season apart from that second half against Leeds. So before we get on to Villa's actual footballing ability, just I want to end on the VAR thing. From your opinion, Matt, you've seen football. I'm just coming to you because you're the older of the three of us and not trying to throw shade or anything. You've seen football in the 90s when Villa were good. You've seen the O'Neill era. You've seen some terrible times like we've both seen. How is VAR impacting football, do you think? Is it ruining the game? I know obviously we're not there, but I didn't celebrate Watkins' goal. I did a little fist bump and I was like, well, I'm not getting too carried away. When they gave the penalty, I was thinking, not going to get too carried away because they might overturn it. Do you think that VAR is ruining the experience of watching football?
Yeah, I think more so if we're in the stadiums, but I'm a kind of old romantic that I kind of want football to be as pure, and I know it can't be the same. I know a kickabout on a Sunday Park's pitch can't be the same as Premier League or a World Cup, but I like it when I think they're interfering with something that doesn't need interfering with. If this was such a good system that it ended any debate without a shadow of a doubt, fine. You know, we will accept that football's clinical, there's so many sums of money involved, but it's actually making it worse. It's adding to the kind of sense of injustice because, like you said, what is a goal 2 minutes previously is no longer a goal. And you're thinking, well, why? What's actually changed? What other than somebody who's got an etch-a-sketch and drawn a couple of pictures on a screen, what's changed? So, listen, I'm sure I wouldn't be the only football fan who's, I can say tearing their hair out, but I'm probably way beyond that. But I don't understand it. I don't understand what it's trying to achieve, because it's not actually doing what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to take all this kind of uncertainty and all these kind of, you know, these human errors. It's supposed to take it out completely. And it's just become a mess, hasn't it?
James, you've got some hair that you could pull out. What do you think about VAR?
No, you should like it because it should come into, you know, I remember when we were in the championship and we were thinking these championship refs can't get anything right, they need help. And so a system comes in, and I think the most frustrating aspects of it are just highlighted all the time. I think, you know, three quarters of last season, they had a monitor they never used to look at stuff. And I think it always comes back to these offsides and drawing the image and not using, you know, the Premier League, the richest league in the world, can't afford to put cameras everywhere to make a good line and make a right decision. It can't afford to petition against rules that are stupid. It's just, you know, I was worried that I was losing my hair. I definitely am now. I'm going to be pulling it. I was stressed. I was nervous, anxious. And, you know, I was full-blooded screaming when we scored because I thought we did fight to get back into that game and nothing went our way. And we messed up so many times ourselves. We were, you know, masters of our own downfall. We get the chance score and it don't exist anymore because Ollie Watkins runs back to the centre circle, puts the ball down and it's off back to a goal kick again because it's some for some reason offside. And, you know, they don't question the foul. Ogbonna's wrapped around him. They don't question that. It's all on Ollie Watkins and it's frustrating. It's rubbish. It really is killing football. We see it from Leeds fans when Bamford's chance was drawn out. We saw it from us last season a few times. And now again, it is being the great decider in games, and it's not players anymore. It is VAR and offside, which is deciding things. And can you say that you want this, application of VAR and offside? Because I don't, and I don't think anyone does.
Why don't they just be done with it and just kind of microchip all the players so it pings?
I think we'll just get rid of football and just stick Football Manager on a big screen and just play a computer game, because that's effectively what it is now. It's such a fine margin that it is down to the millimetres of a shirt sleeve or a boot lace. It's ridiculous, isn't it? I think there's loads of comments coming in. There's a lot of people watching. It's impossible for me to read things that people are saying because the comments are flying through like this. The general consensus is everyone hates VAR. So I do want to get out of this discussion at some point, but what are the options? Do you either scrap it completely and say, we've made a mistake, we're going to go back to referees? I don't see FIFA or whoever is making these decisions swallowing their pride and doing that. You either need to massively up the technology, like you said, James, and have cameras everywhere to give you this almost 360 angle of what everything's going on, which they're not going to be able to implement in every football stadium anyway. Mm-hmm. Do the referees just need to be better at their job and be more competent? Does the training need to be better? What is the solution to a VAR problem that is now infecting the game at a level where players are starting to say, look, there's a problem with this now and I'm not happy with it?
No quick and easy solution, because, you know, if you're coaching, I'm no coach, but if you're coaching a striker like Ollie Watkins, you want him on the back shoulder doing that exact thing. If he's going to get punished for it, it's pointless having that exact role. Like, there's no point in Ollie Watkins having that exact role if that is the fine margins for applying to it. If he's doing his job and pressuring a defender and doing that, and his T-shirt line happens to be offside, then maybe, you know, Kappa should have us in that Cameroon 02 kit with no sleeves, because, you know, these are the margins we're talking about. Is that T-shirt line, is Villa's sleeve long enough to, you know, to be detected? It's just these really annoying details. So I don't know how you fix it now.
The comment just come through of something I suggested before about putting a time limit on VAR or a certain amount of replays that they can watch. They can only use up 5 replays or something. And if it's not clear and obvious within 5 replays, the decision can't be overturned from the on-field referee. But then you're just going to have people saying, well, we made the wrong decision because we only had 5 replays to use, or we only had a minute, we were under pressure. I just don't think there's a way that football wins off the back of this. The referees will, because they'll just have all their mates come out and dig them out and go, oh, well, you know, it's a difficult job. Dermot Gallagher will be on Sky going, I think this was right, And ultimately, they'll get away with it.
I think you could have 2 or 3 appeals, couldn't they? You can play during each game, and if you think, but the thing is, if you're playing the appeal card blind, you're not even going to have the benefit of the replays of doing it. So you'd probably have to be doing it a bit more wisely. But, you know, it comes back to, you were saying, what's the solution? Clear and obvious, isn't it? There's not a clear and obvious solution other than to scrap it, because it's not actually improved anything whatsoever. What would we be lost if VAR disappeared tomorrow? Would it negatively affect the game?
No. Because the whole thing was, well, this will get rid of contentious decisions. It'll get rid of all the debate of football. And it just seems to have caused more grief in the last year or so than it has before. Because before all this, if a referee gets a decision wrong in a split moment in the heat of the game, and you think, well, it's a difficult job, he only gets to see it once, he's missed it, as much as it's frustrating, you almost understand it. But to have watched it from several different angles and trained referees are viewing it back for 2.5 minutes and being so, I can't think of a good word, but being so technical and like you said, James, down to the shirt lines and the boots being slightly off and all the arrows and stuff. It's just rubbish, isn't it? And it's rubbish when you're in the stadium because you don't know what's going on. But when you're watching on the TV, it just ruins the game.
I think the argument is that Villa should have put the game away well before that, but football doesn't work like that. People miss these perfect chances all the time. It all comes down to that last minute header, you know, rushing the box with extra men, taking the risk of being exploited on the counter just to get that equaliser. You do that, it comes down to a decision. VAR has that impact. Whether it lost us a game is another debate, but it took all that 2-2 away. And yeah, we missed a penalty to make it 2-2, but we have to acknowledge here that the ball was in the back of the net. We did score, and it come down to this weird rule that, and that is a debate. The debate isn't whether Ollie Watkins should have scored. We can talk about that all night about his penalty record. We had the ball in the back of the net, as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, it's not good enough, is it?
Well, why does the ref get a safety net if he makes a mistake? Why doesn't Ollie Watkins say, I've made a mistake from the penalty spot? Why don't I get a robot to come and take a retake? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. We're allowed to witness human error in the players, but the referees don't get to go through human error.
Get three lots of human error instead from the referee.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, the standard of the refereeing is poor, isn't it? But that's another debate. We've got 15 minutes into this, and I'm wary of this not being too long anyway. I do want to talk about the football. There's people talking in the comments about you're acting as if VAR lost us the game, which, to a certain extent, yes, like James said, we had a goal. What I would say is a legal goal usually ruled out because it was such a fine decision. However, having said that, it's poor from Villa to go down a goal within the first few seconds of a game twice at the start of the first half and the start of the second half. You can't excuse that football either.
No, I think if you're clutching for positives, is that Villa reacted quite well to conceding twice at the start of each half. And I think Villa went to dominate the game. I think West Ham realised they'd kind of got the nose in front and were prepared, but content to protect what they got. So, yeah, we've said it, haven't we? I think I put something on Twitter, you know, during lockdown one, Villa used that very wisely to tighten up the defence. And we were told about this mean machine defence and how Villa were more streetwise and more solid. And the irony is, if Villa could go back to those kind of mean machine defensive ways, you'd back them to score at least one goal every single game. A clean sheet for Villa would equal a victory now, because I think they'd score, you know, have they scored in every game so far this season, with the exception of Leeds?
Well, I think so.
Asking a lot of me. I assume so, yeah, because those are our only losses. I mean, we scored against Brighton. Yeah.
Those are the first goals we've conceded on the road all season. Which is annoying that we could see that record went out in the first couple of minutes of the first half. And then the second half one, it's just too easy. There's people saying you've got to talk about our lack of ability to defend, which, yeah, it's fair. We talked a lot about Tyrone Mings recently, haven't we? And again, he just doesn't look his usual self. And Villa just make it look too easy. The zone of marking thing we'll get onto in a sec. I know you want to speak about that, James. But when we talk in the summer about do we need a centre-back, to replace Konsa or Mings, and Konsa now seems the better centre-half of the two anyway. Is that something that you're concerned about now, that Villa do need additions at the back when you hurry up and take that sip of beer?
Oh, me? Sorry, I was...
I thought it was a can of San Pellegrino Orange.
It's quite nice, actually. Beavertown Gamma Ray, American Pale Ale.
Hashtag
I'm going to give you free ones, man.
I'm not being sponsored by them, regrettably, but... what's the question?
Our defence, is Mings too laid back?
I think it's collective again, isn't it? I don't think it's just Mings. Was Mings to blame for the first goal? I don't think he was. I don't know. To me, it comes back to, we've kind of bemoaned that back four or previous incarnation of it last year. They had some respite to really kind of drill down into what they're all about and found a way of being a solid unit. Now, to me, probably sound like a broken record, but we come back to the fact, don't we, that we've got one of England's best centre-halves for a generation. He's on the coaching pitches with them every day. We've got Dean Smith, who's a centre-half by trade. I don't think Villa should concede from set pieces as easily as that, to be honest. So I'm not sure it's so much about personnel as it is about knowing what they're doing. In basic situations like that. I like Mings. I think he's good. I think sometimes we speak about him being too casual. You know, got away with one, didn't he? First half, I think, when he tried a Cruyff turn or something on the edge of his box. I don't think it's just Toro means. I think Villa collectively, Villa win together, Villa lose together. I think Villa collectively need to be a lot better. The other thing I was going to say, at the opposite end of the field, it's bizarre, but for some reason, I've got more of an appreciation this season for Trezeguet than I did last season. And he's missing chances left, right and centre at the moment. And I don't know. I mean, you'd have wanted it to be the other way around, wouldn't you? Trezeguet teeing up Watkins for that one. And having said that, Watkins has gone and pinged over a header when he probably should have hit the target. So it's that, isn't it? Villa, between that penalty box and that penalty box, I think we're the best team. But in the places that mattered, they were found wanting again. And that's what's going to erode any kind of momentum that Villa thought they'd started this season with, if they're still going to be found wanting in those key areas.
Yeah, just before we get on to Trezeguet and stuff, I've just seen an interesting comment. Things are coming in so quick, I've lost it now. It was there just. Oh, this is so annoying. From Craig, he says, is this an issue that there's no one pushing for positions at centre-back, that there's no pressure on Ezri Konsa and Tyrone Mings, that Bjorn Engels is the forgotten man, disappeared out of nowhere, and Courtney Hawes is effectively a reserve player that isn't going to start games in the Premier League anyway? Do you think that's part of the problem, James?
Yeah, there's been obviously injury issues that have kind of hampered their start to the season. It's only really been kind of Mings and Konsa in consideration. And when you look at Ezri Konsa, you know, Tyrone Mings is leading the line. I think that you go back to the start of last season, his partnership with Bjorn Engels, everyone brought that up as a massive positive. Tyrone Mings ascended further than Ezri Konsa, now his partner. Ezri Konsa has matched him. So Tyrone Mings has been this kind of steady rock that's brought everything up. And now I feel like it's almost like you can see kind of Ezri Konsa almost surpassing him, but there's no one else kind of pushing through to compete for these places. So I think naturally, we've brought it up so many times, Dan, like naturally I think you do settle when you don't have that competition, that really intense competition. I see people, you know, bringing out Courtney Hawes's kind of aerial duels one stats and stuff like that, and you know, it doesn't seem to be a reality now. I think we kind of have to accept it's just going to be Tyrone Mings and Ezri Konsa until something, you know, colossal happens to it, or you know, an absolute calamity happens. And I know people do bring up these mistakes and that, but there's been nothing, I guess, to really catch Dean Smith's eye and make him make that decision, because again, you know, he's the guy with all the knowledge, his coaching staff with all the knowledge, and that change isn't being made. It's like a number of things, so there must be some reasoning behind it, even if it isn't down to like just pure numbers and depth.
Yeah,
you talk about the lack of pressure, Dan. He's not a centre half on the bench.
It was so, not.
Do you know what I mean? That shows you, in effect, that, you know, Tyrone Mings and Ezri Konsa are going to have to do something spectacular, or God forbid, be carried off on a stretcher. I'd have thought to fall out of that team, because what you do, you can put Almo perhaps at centre half, or move one of your fullbacks inside. But that shows that there's nobody breathing down the necks. I don't think Villa have conceded goals because of complacency. I think it's a lack of concentration. I think it's disorganisation at set pieces. I think it's kicking off the second half and not being quite at it. I don't think it is complacency, but I don't think the fact that there's nobody, that there isn't anybody breathing down, I think the fact there's nobody breathing down the back of the necks is not pushing that extra level out of them as well.
Yeah. Before we push you on zonal marking, James, because this is just such a stupid topic, there's a comment that's just come through. Matt, this is going to be out of your demographic, but I want to mention it anyway, from Jack Mate, who does a quite big podcast on Spotify. He's been in my Twitter DMs since the start of the season, my Twitter notifications, talking about how much Lanzini is better than Jack Grealish. So up until today, we've been tweeting back and forth. And I said, before kickoff, Villa to win tonight. And he's just replied to me on Twitter saying, you know, you were wrong or whatever. And now he's watching the stream. So thank you very much for hopping in. Not your demographic, Matt. That's fine, understandable. Might well not be yours, James.
That's nice to see.
I've had a few people like, why does he follow you? He's got hundreds of thousands of followers. I did a bit of editing work for him once back in the day. Anyway, off topic. Back to zonal marking, more importantly. James, why have we got Angelo Ogbonna, who's 6'3", being man marked, or his man is John McGinn, who's 5'8", 5'9". Tyrone Mings is stood marking empty space, who's 6'5". How is he allowed a free run at goal and a free header in the first couple of minutes of a football game?
So I think the first thing to say is, if you did have Sky Sports and you did record that match, you need to go back and watch Jamie Carragher at halftime, because I think he really nailed it perfectly. There's a lot of confusion over Villa's marking system that extends not just from the fans watching and people kind of commenting on it, but also the players, because it is a mixed marking system. You have a zonal area guarding the goal and people marking players at the back, and it seems to Villa fans that the wrong people are involved in either set, because you've got kind of John McGinn and Matt Target marking Ogbonna. And I think, Dan, we go back to Southampton and Vestergaard, it's the exact same thing, like down to a T. You know, John McGinn as a midfielder is marking the defender on one side. There's confusion. They don't know who to follow. It comes in. It's a perfect ball. It's a really good header as well. We can't dispute the fact that it's a really good chance made. But did Villa do their best? Arguably not. And that has been a story this season. That goal has been created by West Ham, by Southampton. I think you can go back a few times and see Almo marking Johnny Evans. So these things happen. And I just don't know why they won't commit to either fully man marking or fully zonal marking, because this mixed system, it creates a confusion in the build-up, it seems like. And by the time Ogbonna's reacted, massive Ogbonna's reacted, is running in the ball, all John McGinn can do is react. And as a smaller player, he loses his man. He's got no kind of awareness of where Ogbonna's heading. And maybe Dean Smith's thinking is, I put two smaller players on a bigger player and that makes it harder. It didn't matter in the end, because...
Especially when Tyrone Mings is standing in free space doing nothing.
Yeah, I guess. I couldn't even begin to explain the thinking, because, you know, for me, it would seem very... I don't know, you would assign the tallest man to the tallest man. I guess maybe that's too old school, but I think that maybe that would have saved Villa. But then, you know, you don't speak about these things when they're working, that they're quiet things that nine times out of 10 they work. Then it's on the 10th time when something goes in that we complain. But, you know, this has been a common theme now for Villa. We have seen this repeat, this exact same situation repeat. So here it is as a problem that needs solving. But I don't think I'm educated enough to understand the thinking behind it, because, you know, I can't put a T on why that would have happened, because it seemed like a very clear threat. We're going back to Vestergaard, Johnny Evans, seems like very clear threats that aren't being dealt with.
Matt, are you educated enough to be able to tell us the difference?
Well, I'm not particularly well educated, and I'm thinking, well, how could possibly put in two little men on a big man, unless they're standing on, you know, if you see like a pantomime, they're standing on each other's shoulders with a big long coat.
In a big coat, yeah.
Unless you're doing that, I think the wisdom of it.
Because McGinn was Ogbonna's man, because he was Vestergaard's man, and they did the exact same thing, and they were in the exact same positions. It didn't matter. Because I guess I'm not going to say he's going to be like that guy in BoJack Horseman, that kid who's in a trench coat and there's three of them pretending to be a man. But like two players on one player, is no matter how tall they are, is a harder situation to deal with. If to even go into what the thinking might have been, maybe Tyrone, the taller players are in a position where the ball is most likely to be played in rather than a player. But look, we got done on it, and we've been done on it a few times now, so it is annoying.
Someone asked about how much we missed Ross Barkley in the last couple of games and whether that's had an impact. I was going to say, Barkley came off in that Southampton game. I've just checked and it was Brighton. Actually done some research. I was wondering whether Barkley would have been McGinn's man instead, because he's obviously taller than McGinn, but that doesn't add up because McGinn is still on the biggest players on the pitch. So we didn't miss Barkley in that respect, but do you think we missed him at the opposite end of the pitch where he's actually meant to be playing? We'll go for you first, Matt.
Just comes as a criticism of Conor Hourihan, doesn't it? This always the full guy. But I think Villa are weaker in the Premier League with him in the team. It sounds really, really harsh, but I just find that the game passes him by.
We started well though, and he played in the team then. Start the season.
God, when was that? Was that Fulham, wasn't it? Is that the first? It's the first time he's been in, isn't it? I think
Fulham, Sheffield United.
Since Fulham. Maybe we've been sport then. Maybe we've been sport of having Barkley's physicality and athleticism. Because it just doesn't quite do it for me. I know it allowed kind of McGinn to roam a little bit more. But yeah, I think Villa did miss him. But I think to me, I think James, you said, didn't you, that I think I saw your tweet that Villa lack height. To me, I lack pace in this team as well. And I just don't think I don't know. I feel like I dig out Conor Hourihan too much. So, I mean, what are people saying in the comments about him? Am I being too harsh again or not?
Alex Burns literally just put one in saying Hourihan doesn't cut it for me, only good from set pieces. He did have a good free kick, to be fair, that I think the keeper saved. Comment here from Sarbin on Blue says Trez was a passenger all night and Conor was very poor. Apart from that, we played well. Do you agree that Trez's guy was a passenger?
Well, no, because he was involved. It's just his involvement wasn't effective enough. I mean, a passenger, I guess, I'm not complaining about the comment. I guess a passenger is someone the game passes by. Trez was really, really involved. I mean, I guess, quote unquote, winning the penalty. Fluffing the chances. You know, he was very, very involved. It's just his involvement wasn't to any degree as effective as we wanted to be. Same probably with Conor Hourihan. I mean, he probably couldn't have done any more with the chance he had the free kick. And, you know, Hourihan brings these positives, but maybe Barkley brings just a little bit more. Maybe you might even consider Barkley and Hourihan playing. I don't know, because I think with the problems that happened, I can't see Barkley fixing it. Villa had the chances to score and didn't take them without Ross Barkley. Maybe he brings a bit more height, a bit more pace to deal with the chances West Ham had against us. But as for going forward, it was just in that final kick, the final header that we were missing. So
it's the finish, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's in the right positions, but hasn't got the ability to put him in the back of the net. He should have scored that one. You can't get away from it, can you? Mm-hmm. But it's becoming a bit of a thing now, isn't it? And I wonder whether it's a confidence hit for him as well, that whether he's thinking of it in that way, that I keep getting these chances and I'm struggling to put one away. Even the Arsenal one he did score was given as an own goal. He doesn't officially even get that one. So,
what do you think of the penalty?
The actual penalty? The first replay of it, when you can only see from like front on, I didn't think Rice even touched him. He touched him a bit further up, but it looked like he just about pinged his shirt a little bit. I think the angle from behind.
Penalty, didn't he?
Yeah, I think the angle from behind had a bit more of his shirt, but it's one of those. It's not really enough to bring him down, probably, but if you touch your man in the box, he's going to go down, isn't he? So
I think pouring the blood, it probably convinces the referee as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. The penalty itself, I think they said that Watkins' penalty record is he's missed 4 of 6 or something like that. I know Ollie Watkins is a striker and it's good for his goal tally and all the rest of it, good for his confidence as well to keep scoring, but should Ollie Watkins be on penalties? Should Jack Grealish be taking them, do you think?
I mean, you had like a set-piece taker, a set-piece like machine on the team in Conor Hourihan, who seems to be able to play corners in well.
Is he still on then?
No, he got taken off, I think, bang on the penalty for it was Traore and Al Ghazi came on. And I think Hourihan, people say Jack, but yeah, you have Conor Hourihan there. He's done it for, you know, Barnsley and taking penalties. And then he comes to us and, you know, the only kind of quality we use is the other two set pieces and not the best set piece. Ollie Watkins' record, I think, was 2 from 5. And I think penalties, 75% chance of scoring an average penalty. Off the top of my head, probably not right. That means it's a gimme. It's close enough to a free goal that you're going to have. So if you're missing 2 out of 5, your record's not great. It needs to improve and you can't be taking penalties at the highest level because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, criticise Ollie Watkins too much, but this is a situation deserving of it. And people are saying, again, that the cries come out, I'm not convinced about Ollie Watkins, and then he does kind of try and redeem himself at the end. That's the biggest way to redeem yourself, is scoring the easiest chance you're ever going to have to score a goal in the Premier League, bar a tapping.
And the technology's taken that and a point away from Villa.
Yeah, and I'm going back to the actual penalty. It's a shirt pull. I mean, it's soft. It's not even about it going down. A shirt pull's a penalty, isn't it? It's a foul in the box. It should be a foul outside the box. It's a foul in the box. So I guess it gets given on that basis. But, you know, visually, I think last week was a bit more appealing on the foul scale. But, yeah, it wasn't great from Watkins. The stat as well, that was before he missed. So it's missed 3 now.
3 or 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a bit of context. I know we're all feeling a bit fragile and vulnerable because of 2 defeats where Villa should have taken at least a point and 2 games that have ended in controversy and drama with decisions going against us. If Villa win, I think this table's up to date now. Well, it is, because West Ham are 5th. If Villa win their game in hand, that puts them 3 points off the top spot. Which, and I know it's a crazy Premier League. I know the Premier League has reinvented itself as the championship this year because it's absolutely mad and anybody can beat anybody.
Yeah.
But I think I'm saying this as a positive note, not to add to our frustration. If only we'd have beaten Brighton, if only we'd have beaten West Ham, we'd have been top of the league by now. But just to say, as disappointing as it is, we're still in a lot better shape than we were this time, at this stage of the season, last season. You know, providing, Christ knows what's happening with Newcastle. I think there's a story breaking.
I was about to ask you about that.
Their training ground is shut down. So whether that match will happen on Friday, I don't know. But if it does, you'd back Villa if they iron out some of the deficiencies of the last couple of games. You'd back Villa to win that. So it's not a disastrous start to the season. It's frustrating having given ourselves this platform with some big wins that we aren't building on this platform. But in the context of where we were the last time we played West Ham away, at the back end of last season, you know, I think we just need to keep that in mind.
There's a couple of comments here. One from Darren Jones going, oh, it's only Man City this game in hand. And then Dean Cole follows it up by saying, we won't beat Man City if the game in hand if we struggle against West Ham, which is the total opposite of what Villa have been this season. We've beat all the good sides. We've beat Liverpool, Leicester and Arsenal. It's struggling against West Ham, Brighton, Leeds, Southampton that's cost us. So we'll probably beat Man City and lose to Newcastle. Speaking of that Newcastle, just before we get out of here, because we've got approaching 40 minutes, what is the story here? I think it's the Telegraph that have spoken about it first. Wednesday, the whole of the first team is in isolation, I believe, and the training ground shut till Wednesday, and they won't train together before they play Villa on Friday night. Now, first of all, I might think that missing Steve Bruce's training sessions might actually benefit Newcastle. But not playing together and being in isolation, and some of them obviously having the virus as well, we don't know who, whether it's players or staff, that is going to impact Newcastle's preparation for this game, isn't it? And hopefully that means that it's something in Villa's favour.
I don't know, because if you go off what Richie Delap said about Steve Bruce's training grounds, he kind of came in with a high-waisted shorts with a ball in his hand and just chucked it into the middle of them and just went, let's play, boys. Like, so I don't know what massive benefit there, but nah, you know, Bruce is doing, I don't know, he's doing all right at Newcastle. He's kind of up and down every week, and no one cares, but it is a serious situation. If you go across the pond and in NFL, there's a team that had no quarterbacks, they all failed the COVID protocol, and they had play a game, the Denver Broncos had to play a game without a quarterback. So it's baffling how it's been managed and, you know, dealt with, because last time this happened, you know, we didn't play for months. It was, the season was cut off, and now I just don't know kind of what's going on with it. It's a bit of an odd one, and I guess based on evidence, I guess expect the match to be played, because happened.
I think the game will be played, because as much as, unless they've all currently got the virus, if there's enough players test negative for it, as much as they've missed training sessions, Newcastle will have to prove that they can't field a team to be able to forfeit the game or get it postponed. So Newcastle will have to put some kind of side out, whether that features youth players or whether actually no one's actually got the virus. It's a developing story, isn't it? So we don't know, but the game's come thick and fast, and, you know, 5 days from now, that Newcastle game will be done and dusted, hopefully. So,
you're right, it's a developing story, more as we get it. Apparently, I'm just reading this, it would need 14 players to be ruled out for the club to be able to move to cancel the match.
Newcastle have got a case to say, look, we've not trained properly, you know, players have got it, staff have got it, it's not fair. But if they've got 11 or 14, however many players they need to be, if they've got them fit and ready, whether that means youth players, I don't think they can get away with cancelling the game. But again,
imagine if Bruce has to get his boots on and begins marking him from a corner.
To be fair, probably have Bruce fit in at centre back for us, to be fair.
I can see Bruce, he's kind of taking his shirt off and swirling it around his head and running the length of the
That's a horrible thought. There's far too much mass hysteria going on in this podcast. We're getting a bit too carried away.
Yeah,
it's intelligent for you.
I think we've covered everything that I wanted to. So I think that's probably our little match roundup done for this week. We're now into that traditional festive period now, aren't we? We can call it the festive period is upon us, where the games come thick and fast and all the other cliches that you can think of. So it's pretty much a Villa game and a Villa podcast every few days for the next month. We've also got a lot of other content planned in the weeks between games, and we've got another interview that we've recorded and is already in the bag. We're not going to reveal who it is, but it's
brilliant.
Very good. Yeah. Very, very, very good, and that'll hopefully be out, fingers crossed, next Monday. But if not, some point next week. So keep an eye out for that as well. Gentlemen,
thank you. What do you think of, sorry to interrupt your outro, what do you think of my retro Adidas, by the way? You're liking it or not?
You're the only one not on theme.
And I get the cap on my John, mate.
Feel a bit of a throwback. I quite like it. I've just dug it out of my wardrobe. I think it's look. I can imagine Brucey Tech's training in the top lot. Actually,
it's all right. Yeah, it's not bad. White's a bit of a funny colour, isn't it? I'd drop food down myself or something, so I wouldn't go for white.
Yeah, I won't show you the white bottoms.
Oh God. Yeah, what I'm more annoyed with is that you're downstairs and not using the proper equipment that we've bought for you.
Yeah, sorry about my son just getting the requisite amount of sleep. I'm sorry about that. Don't. You just worry about your audio quality. I'll just worry about the welfare of my children.
Yeah, well, it's better to do it the other way around, isn't it? I'm worried about the welfare of your children.
And I'm worried about the audio,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So thank you very much for tuning in this evening, everybody. There's been some good numbers and loads of comments. So we'll try and do some kind of Q&A or some kind of proper assessment where we can sit down and answer some talking points, because there's loads and loads of comments and it's just hard to get through to them. I know, James, you can see the comments and there seems to be more than ever come through tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for getting involved. As I was saying before I was interrupted, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me at 10:45 on a Monday. It's been a pleasure. It's been a good chat about VAR and the state of football and how Villa's defending is poor and should be better. We're back on Friday evening, permitting that Newcastle actually turn up and play. If not, I will be writing a letter to the Premier League to ask for 3 points.
Dan, did you see me swab on the time thing?
Yeah. just bin him off now.
Yeah, not really? Bad that. Should we just cut him off? Should we just get rid of him? There we go. Yeah, that's better.
That's better. Oh, normality's been restored.
What I love that people won't be able to see is that I can see like the chat box window at the bottom and Matt's sticking his fingers up and stuff. So that's nice to see. So we'll let him go. We'll let you all go. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, James. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you on Friday.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa!